Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Josh Brown, it's Tuesday, not Monday, but we're still wound up.
I'm so sorry. I missed yesterday because I was in London seeing Boy Genius, which was really good, but I was
Are they better or worse than Boy George? That's the best joke I can do. I don't know.
It has Boy in the title.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I don't know any other artists with the name Boyzone.
Hey, there you go. Are they better or worse than Boyzone?
They're better than Boyzone.
That's fair. That's a hard bar to clear.
Absolutely. My mum listened to Boyzone a lot, I think, when I was younger.
Super quickly, where did you come down on the high school war between the various boy bands? I was always a five man.
Before my time,
really?
Unfortunately.
Oh, I guess they were.
By the time I was in school, old enough to talk about music, it was like Busted.
I remember them coming in, and it was Busted versus McFly. But when I was a certain age, it was Westlife, Boyzone, Five, Blue, and you could only pick one. And I was picking Five.
At that point, Westlife, Boyzone, Five, etc. They were like mama music, you know what I mean? That's what I grew up with my mum listening to. And I was always a Robbie Williams boy. I want to go for that. I love Robbie
Williams,
with
him
Williams,
to a point,
man.
You know, when he wrote that, he didn't put a hand on his arm or his hand. He put an eye, sorry, on his hand.
Yeah.
And he went on that interview where he didn't talk, he put his hand up.
Oh,
and
everyone see this.
He's lost that. He's gone a bit weird. Then he did that radio song. And it was like it wasn't anywhere near as good as Rock DJ. he went off the boil.
I need to know more about Robbie Williams' law. Yeah. I unfortunately don't know.
He had such a good, you know, when you're a kid and you just don't have any music taste.
Yeah.
And it's just like that. And you're like, oh, Robbie, like you said, I guess I'll just follow Robbie Williams for a bit.
Exactly.
I'll just follow whatever the radio is telling me is good.
I had my mom had a Robbie Williams like swing record.
You're doing an actual swing motion.
I'm literally doing it because he like covered a bunch of swing songs,
yes,
I guess.
And that's part of his redemption after he lost it.
And I used to love that. I think it was called Swing When You're Winning or something. Sing When You're Winning. I don't know, something like that. And I enjoyed it a lot. Anyway, not the point. This is not a Robbie Williams podcast.
Yes.
The point is, I was away seeing Boy Genius.
Okay.
And I just kind of wanted to open this podcast with an apology. Because do you ever have those moments where you just, I have them a lot on this podcast, funnily enough, where you just can't conversate? You try to string a sentence together.
Is that a word?
I hope so.
Conversate.
I'm making it up now.
Yes,
and it just doesn't work. I was in a shop. I was in a coffee shop in London before the gig. And we needed some food before we went there. And I just didn't know what to say to the guy in the coffee shop. So I kind of went in like...
Well, the person serving you.
Yeah, I had like a panic.
Just point at coffee.
He was like looking at me, waiting for me to say something. I didn't know how it worked. And I just kind of... I said something. He didn't hear it. And he's like, what? And I just said, I was asking my mum a question. I was like, is it okay to order some food? And the guy was very nice, but he treated me like
were
a kid and I needed to. No, it's before I started drinking.
How do you know how it was going to work?
I was just like, is it okay to order some food? What if it wasn't?
Why is he there if it's not okay?
He was like, yeah, of course, you can order some food. And I was like, oh, thank you, sir. Thank you so much for walking me through this. So I managed to order some food, but that just went wrong. And then I was going to some botanical gardens and there was a lovely old woman on there, like letting us in, scanning the tickets, and I couldn't talk to her either. She was like, she was saying about how her card scanner called Howard wasn't working today, and I was like, sorry, who's Howard?
Yeah,
and she was like, Howard's my card scanner, and I'm like, I'm having a hard time.
Okay, this is very much an anomaly. Very few random people have named their card scanners.
It was a funny gag, but you know when you're just like, you're lagging behind in your brain.
I wouldn't keep up with that.
I couldn't keep up with it, and it was disappointing, but the point is, I was in this mode where I could barely talk to my friend and girlfriend.
Right.
I couldn't string words together.
Just looking through time and space.
And then I had some really lovely interactions with people who listened to the podcast and
shout out.
watched the YouTube channel, and that was really nice, but I need to apologize for barely being able to string a sentence together. I don't know what I said. I was like, oh, hi. This is before I started drinking again, by the way. I just couldn't do it. So apologies for being an awkward mess. I'd like to say it was a one-off, but it wasn't. It's not. I'm always like that.
I was going to say, if they've followed us for this long, they know to expect an awkward mess. If there's spikes of energy in there,
this
then
was really awkward.
Consider yourself lucky.
I was bad. I was on bad form. I just couldn't speak, man. I was not. My social battery must have been drained or something. Yeah. I'm normally a little bit better, but I apologize. The point is, it was really nice to meet everyone. The few people who did come up. It was really lovely. Lovely. Thank you for doing that.
Massive thank you to everybody for just anything that ever happens in person. I'm always blown away by it. It's an honor to be heard by all of you, genuinely. And we'll transition into various games and talking points for the week. Like I said, we're a day late, but it doesn't matter because there's plenty of games to actually talk about. Plenty of new things actually doing the rounds. The Mortal Kombat 1 beta was this past weekend. We'll talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the game. I want to touch on Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood. And if we have time, which I'm pretty sure we will, don't know why I added that, because we will get there. Blasphemous 2.
Yes.
Just conversationally, I'm adding more in than I need to. But let's talk about Mortal Kombat 1. This was a thing that entered the beta at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday. It was meant to run until Monday afternoon. Then they extended it because of how well it was doing. And they did have a few server issues. At the start, this game's awesome. This game's phenomenal. I didn't really care about it, not that much. And Mortal Kombat is in my top three franchises of all time.
It's in your DNA.
It kind of is. And it's just, that's very good. Is that a pull from Mortal Kombat 11?
It wasn't, actually.
That was their whole marketing thing. It's in our blood or something.
I'll take it.
I'll take that. But yeah, the run up to this, obviously the concept for this is that Liu Kang has got all the powers of Raiden, who's like a god. He's one of the elder gods. Remade the world, restarting the timeline, soft reboot for the franchise itself. Liu Kang's consciousness is the only thing that carries forward, at least by the looks of it. So it's still all one big timeline, but it's their excuse as a franchise to reboot everything. And they've made it an assist fighter, so it's all cameo-based, which is what a lot of the towers were in Mortal Kombat 11. It was a weird thing going into this, where I was just like, I don't like assist fighters.
I mean,
I love Tekken Tag, but I'm not that bothered. I want to just do one-on-ones. I just want to do proper fights. I don't want to be bringing characters in who don't make sense together and whatever.
This is hilarious because just before we started recording this podcast, we were talking, you were telling me about the AEW All In event happening this weekend. And you were similarly...
There's not enough one-on-one fights.
Yeah, similarly talking about your love of one-on-one fights in real life as well. So that's really interesting.
Why is Hangman not fighting Moxley, for the five people who will understand that reference? But still, so going into this, I was just like, I don't know about this. I'm a bit skeptical because it's Warner Brothers at the helm. I know all the stuff behind the scenes where they swapped out making the next Injustice. They did Mortal Kombat instead. They're leaning the F into all the cameo skins. There's Homelander and a dude from the Invincible show and everything else. And I was just like, is the cameo system just going to be this glorified paid-for skin thing where they can charge you all these different cosmetic options and everything? And is the core fighting not going to be that good? No, the opposite is true. The core fighting is phenomenal. The cameo stuff, they're pretty much just combo extenders. Mortal Kombat across the last sort of couple of games have done various attempts at giving you different styles or different movesets or whatever when you pick a character, and now that's just handled through the cameo.
Could you tell me more about how that works like in combat? How do you trigger the cameo abilities? Like, how present are they in the gameplay? Because that is my biggest, not necessarily worry, but like you, I don't necessarily love assist characters in fighting games. I kind of just like to get to know... The core character that I'm playing as, go off their abilities rather than have to think about... I don't even like thinking about meters in fighting games, to be honest with you. But
initially,
how does it...
it is a little bit overwhelming because you have your character's moveset, obviously whoever you pick, like Johnny Cage, Sub-Zero, whoever. Did a weird noise there. My mouth did a weird noise. Don't know if that's going to go through the microphone, but it doesn't matter. You pick a main character, like I said, Johnny Cage, Sub-Zero, whoever. Your cameo you pick on the move list, they get a separate cameo list of moves. And then in-game, they're triggered by using the right trigger. Yeah. Either of the two triggers. Some of them have specials, but they're nearly all one-off moves, so you're sort of waiting for a little icon to fill up to do a cameo move at all, but their specials are shared with your special meter, so you also still have, I think it's a four-segmented meter in the bottom left, which your character is using to burn to do enhanced versions of your signature attacks, or you can burn more of it to do a counter if you need to, like, get out of a combo or something. So, like you said, if you don't like watching meters, you don't necessarily need to, but there is a lot of meter management in this.
Right.
So you are kind of keeping an eye on what special moves do you have available, is your cameo ready to do a move, and then using one of the different four directions with R1, at least on PlayStation, to do one of the four moves that are assigned to that your cameo is going to do, or using the right trigger to do something like Jax's ground pound or something like that. In terms of what they do, some of them are combo extenders, some of them, like if you have Frost equipped as your cameo, then she'll just jump in. If you just hit R1 by itself, she'll jump in and just do like a five punch flurry, which obviously like just steps in front of your character and just does that instead.
Yeah.
There are other things, if for Frost, for example, freezing the enemy or doing like a projectile or something like that. You have ones that are launchers. You have ones that cameos jump in midair. So you want to knock someone up and then knock your cameo in so it keeps doing in midair.
Nice.
Some of them are combo extenders, but the timing on it is so weird and it's different for each move. So some of them, you know, getting a handle on that is kind of, I guess, why you would get used to different combos of fighters and cameos, because you want to get used to your custom combos. Like, I was playing as Fire God Liu Kang. I love Liu Kang, by the way. And he's like my favorite character. And the new version of him is like, obviously he's a god. So OP. He's having so much fun. I don't necessarily know if he's OP, but there's a lot to him that just feel like really fun extensions of his former moves that now have more like flame dragons coming out the fingertips and everything. And his fatality is hilarious. But yeah, you're trying to combo these things together in terms of like, get used to what your standard moves are, your standard specials are, and then what can that combo into based on which cameo you have equipped. It's a lot of options, which I love. And the gameplay itself is unbelievably smooth. It also looks gorgeous. Maybe the best looking game of the year.
Wow. Like,
unbelievable.
Now you're talking. I'm interested.
They've cranked all the sliders, all the dials on particle effects and sparks and smoke and everything else. Everyone just looks unbelievable. The gore's ridiculous as well.
Just before we fully move off the cameo character front, can you just give me one final clarification? Huh? Do you have a pool of cameo characters that you can apply to anyone, or do specific characters come with specific cameo characters? Because I know you were, at least in the clip that you posted on Twitter, yes. I think you had Sub-Zero and Frost, which to me made for a natural connection in my brain. Or can you choose any of them with any character?
The way they've handled this at the minute, in the beta, they had, it was like six different fighters. Anyone can pair with anyone, to answer that. But certain pairings, the game does recognize. Frost is Sub-Zero's protege or whatever, or she was in Deadly Alliance. So if you put them together, his dialogue starts to reflect the fact that two people are working together. Like, when you knock someone out in the first round, he says something like, watch our power or something like that.
Right.
Whereas he doesn't say that if you're pairing with like Kano or someone like that. At the minute, they've got the main roster and they've got the cameo roster. Some fighters appear on both.
Cool.
And I think they are selling skins for the cameos. It's their way of like doubling up cosmetics on the main roster and the cameo roster. And I will say, obviously, everything looks absolutely stellar. I do love the look of Sub-Zero and Frost by themselves in their default costumes. But if they do the Mortal Kombat Deception armor for Sub-Zero, I'll be all over that.
Absolutely.
I hate that I'll be all over that. But that's one of the things where I was like, I do want my team looking good.
Yeah.
They have also said that they aren't going to be doing one-on-one fights at all, because the guts of the system are built around the cameos, because that's your extension of the rest of your moves.
Yeah.
So, and the cameos can do fatalities as well. So it's like, at the minute in the beta, main characters, main roster, who you're playing as, doesn't have a second fatality. And they have one main one and that's it. I think they'll add more because over the course of MK11, they brought friendships back and everything. But at the minute, the only way to do two fatalities is to do your cameo's fatality, which in Sub-Zero Frost's case means you're doing one of each, which is a bit of a shame because fatality is one of my favorite parts about Mortal Kombat, and we're only getting one per character.
That is interesting. I thought there'd be way more in there. Well, the
thing that I don't know yet is if, like, because you have a character that can be a main character or equipped as a cameo, if the cameo fatality is different.
Right.
I assume it is, because when you equip Kano or Sonya, they are in their 90s garb.
Nice.
And they have their original fatalities. Jax has the one where he goes like super giant and steps on the dude, which never made any sense. And they never explained it again, but they've just brought it back because it's hilarious. And he just becomes a giant. Sonya blows a kiss that sets them on fire, and Kano just rips out their heart. But their costumes look like they did in the 90s, which is fun. But I wonder, like, you know, if you have Sonya to play as, assumedly she would be modern Sonya. Although I guess she kind of died, but I don't know. They did weird timey-wimey stuff.
That's it, with the weird timeline reset, timeline rejig. Like, will they appear how we expect them to? Or will they go back to their older attire?
That's the thing. I think the whole cameo thing is just their excuse for, like, don't think about it at all. We're just going to bring whoever in. That's who all the, like, most of the fighters that you're getting in the DLC, the premium stuff, is cameo skins anyway.
I know I said that was the final thing on cameo characters. I lied. I have one more question.
Yes.
Are there any cameo fighters out of the selection that you've had access to that you kind of wish were on the main roster as well? Because that's my worry, that they kind of segment some cameo characters to be exclusively cameo characters, but I kind of want to play them as mains.
Yeah, at the minute, it's one of those things where the roster isn't like confirmed fully yet. So like right now, like I said, you've got Sonya and Kano are cameo only in the beta. I want them to be on the main roster. Like, I love Kano. So I hope they do more with that. But yeah, at the minute, they haven't done enough yet to sort of try and distinguish it more. I think they just wanted to show the mechanics of pairing anybody with anybody. And you get some, and the thing is, one of the things that's really overlooked for me talking right now is that they've brought back Li Mei. I don't know if you remember Li Mei, but she was like one of the... They brought in so many characters in the 2000s era.
Yeah.
When they just got... The roster went bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it literally exploded and killed the franchise for a bit. And then Warner Brothers came in and bought NetherRealm, or like renamed them or whatever, and then brought it back. 2011 reboot. Let's go again. That run of just like bringing in so many dudes that no one cared about. Li Mei was one of them. I think she was originally in Deadly Alliance.
I love Deadly Alliance. Right. So I'm surprised I think it was Deadly Alliance.
It was either that or Deception. She's definitely in Armageddon because everybody's in Armageddon. But they've brought Li Mei back and she's had a story trailer now and they've like really fleshed her out. She was in the story mode for Deception as well, in that open world bit where you could go and talk to her and stuff. But she's like, she's awesome. Like they've given her arguably the best fatality in Mortal Kombat history.
Wow.
Which is way up there. It's immediately iconic. I don't think describing this will get us demonetized, but like she does a whole thing where she slashes a dude, pulls their intestines out, holds the end of the intestines, sets fire to it so it becomes a fuse. So it starts to like fuse, it starts to go back to the body. She runs up, she backflip kicks the guy's head off.
Great.
It's still connected to the intestine somehow, and then it follows them up into the sky and it pops like a firework.
That's amazing.
Unbelievable.
That's great.
And as soon as you do it, you're like, that's perfect. And you've given that to one of the most overlooked characters ever.
Yeah.
They've confirmed they're bringing back various like overlooked characters from the 2000s. And like doing right by them. And Li Mei's fighting style is awesome as well. And like I said, story-wise, they've fleshed out all of her stuff with Outworld and whatever. So all round, they're still having fun with it. Ed Boon's still at the head of it. It's one of the longest running franchises with the same creative head at the very, very top. And you can tell. And so I've loved that. I've like really loved my time with it. I played the beta so much across the weekend. And I can't wait to see more of it. I know at Gamescom tonight, actually, by the time this goes live, they are debuting two more characters.
Nice.
So and two more fatalities or whatever. So like I'm looking forward to seeing more of it and consider me in.
My biggest draw for this game, I think we mentioned it when we watched the first trailer, is the fact that they seem to be remixing so much stuff and kind of their variation when it comes to the environment seems so cool and seems so different. Like, I love the art style of MK11, but I like that this game seemingly allows them to draw inspiration from past games, put new spins on things that we haven't seen before, and kind of integrate it all in a really interesting way. And unfortunately, in a way, monetizable way. But at the... you know, core of it, I do love the fact that we get those classic skins for those classic characters. We get these variations on heroes and villains that we've become so accustomed to over the past few years.
Speaking of the monetization, I mean, like, yeah, I think they're going to go hog wild with the amount of skins, the amount of different cameos, and like so many ways they can monetize this. Shang Tsung's a pre-order bonus and he's a main character. So there's a lot of stuff like that. In terms of the world, though, the world that Liu Kang has built, this is fascinating from an in-law perspective, because you've got Liu Kang trying to make the most peaceful realm possible that is then beset by Shang Tsung shaking it up and whatever leads to combat and stuff. But then in our world, you've got NetherRealm and Ed Boon having a fresh lease of life and everything. But the world they've made, biome-wise or geography-wise or whatever, is a mesh of everything all at once. Like there's one of the levels in the beta is like an old school Japanese tea house, but it has flat screen TVs in there as well. And they jar obviously, but they're not like that obvious. It's just that you can kind of notice like, oh, that's an LCD screen on one of the walls next to like, you know, old school Japanese writing and everything. And that's cool. I like the idea that Liu Kang in the world tries to bring all the best of people's tastes or whatever together and makes this like in theory utopia.
Yeah.
But it means that like ancient Japan as a biome is right next to Johnny Cage's condo in Hollywood.
Yes.
And it's you have that direct like geography, which is fascinating. No one's really done that unless you think of it in it's almost like a Fortnite approach to level design. To go down one route with it, but just put different biomes next to each other. It can make sense because a god made it work.
That was it. That's why I was so excited to see an apartment building in a Mortal Kombat game, because it just looks so unlike anything I'd seen before, especially like you mentioned, like the juxtaposition of what you can see outside the windows in that apartment and stuff.
Johnny Cage really is cool. Incredible in this as well. Like I thought he was a bit subdued in the original reveal trailer because he's just in like pants and a shirt and he's putting his shades on. And I was like, oh, is this like a war? It looks more like Johnny Gat from Saints Row,
who himself
was like a Johnny Cage ripoff. Couldn't be further from the truth once you get to actually control him. They've given him taunts finally, and there's way more taunts you can do. There's a star meter that puts a spotlight on him when you're charged up enough.
Very nice.
His fatality is is hilarious. It's lots of like selfies and filming him killing someone and stuff like that. If you equip him as a, if you do a cameo fatality, he steps to the side and films it. And it's just like little things like that, that they're definitely on the right track with it. It's just, it's going to be the Warner Brothers monetization stuff that offsets it,
of course.
But the guts of the system literally are very much in place.
And I hope, I mean, I'm not against, in theory, you know, downloadable cosmetics and stuff like that. As long as the core game itself has plenty of those already. And I hope that this will follow in the vein of an MK11 or an Injustice 2, especially, which had so many customizable armor pieces and so many different outfits that you could equip to your characters on top of the stuff that they added post-launch. And I kind of, as long as the core experience is robust and it's got a lot of content there, then okay, I'll accept extra, you know, downloadable things.
Yeah.
It's only when, like, you get one costume and then they do what you mentioned, you know, then they start saying, here's Sub-Zero's costume from Deception. Here's this thing we know you really want. Here's Quan Chi. We already know you want that guy.
And it's like, don't you want your two picks? Like, I'm going to have Sub-Zero and Scorpion in theory as a team.
Yeah.
Don't you want them to look great together? I'm like, yeah, I kind of do. And then I guess they're probably going to sell all sorts of tag team animations for, like, winning screens and all that kind of stuff. It is worth flagging because there are only a couple of negatives doing the rounds. Either you don't like the cameo system at all, which is fair enough. Like, if you don't like the fact that you've got ostensibly four characters all trying to fight each other and all the weird overlapping animations that happen, it can look a bit messy. The other side is that they, for now, have taken out the introduction dialogue between everybody. It's there if you do just the offline versus mode, but when you're in towers, it doesn't trigger, which is one of the best things about MK11. It's in Injustice and stuff too, is that whatever combo you have, they'll reference something about each other, like a story beat or their history or whatever it is, and they've taken that out of the towers, assumedly as a way just to get to the fighting faster, or a way of not having it so that only two characters are talking to each other and the two cameos aren't even acknowledging anyone.
Yeah, it's a good point.
The cameos are weird when you really think about them because there's no reason they should be fighting with each other or anything like that. And I just wonder if they had to sort of go like, let's just not acknowledge that they're actually about to fight each other.
That has the potential to be a Telfordian rule break if I've ever seen one, you know.
Well, that was the first thing I mentioned about it, right? When we like started covering it, where I was just like, it doesn't make sense that Kano's helping Sub-Zero or whatever it is.
I will say, I suppose, is maybe an end thing if you don't have anything more to say.
Yeah, we should transition.
What I do like is, and I don't even know if they're necessarily going down this route with the story, but I quite like the framing of there always being a Shang Tsung and there always being like a Liu Kang, kind of like how there's always a lighthouse in Bioshock.
I do,
you know?
And I don't, but yeah,
come on. Okay. No, I like that in stories where you have this kind of circular nature and it's like, how much can you change? Mm. How much is there a status quo? How much is there a thread that the universe follows, and how much can you bend and break that? To me, I like that in stories. I liked it in Bioshock. I even quite liked it in the MCU for a while.
Yeah, it's very easy for that to mean that there are then no stakes, because to me, if you take the MCU as an example, once they brought Kang in and they said, oh, actually, there's 50 million timelines, then nothing matters anymore. And especially if you can cross those timelines, anyone who dies will just get another version from that point in time in the other reality and will just carry on as normal, which they've now done a few times in the MCU. They've walked such a tightrope with MK11 because they brought in Kronika, who could control time. Then they killed the woman who can control time, and now Liu Kang did the whole world and everything. But you just assume that it doesn't get too stakeless, because now these new versions of every character other than Liu Kang, they're brand new.
Yeah.
And Scorpion replaced himself in Mortal Kombat 11. So there's like, I hated that. I don't want legacy Scorpion being replaced.
Right.
But at the same time, that was a weird thing. This is such a specific thing. But like, Scorpion went through a lot. Main Scorpion from 1992 went through a lot of stuff. A lot of character development, learned to be a bro with Sub-Zero, learned that actually his clan wasn't betrayed, he's friends with Sub-Zero. Then young Scorpion kills him and his old self replaces him.
Yes.
And now the old version is the new one, but then he has a conversation that ostensibly gets him up to speed again.
Yes.
And so it's it's just one of those things where I'm like, I want full timelines. I don't want you to cut yourself off when you've built this. Like, respect the fact that you have a 30-year legacy.
I know this is bigger, and I know you're going to say it's not necessarily the same. Mm. I said this when we talked about the trailer. I still have faith in NetherRealm because they've kind of done this before. You know, they did it after Armageddon, like you mentioned, you know, when they went back to the original timeline, they changed things around. Like, Raiden goes back.
Oh, dude, 2011's like soft reboot and the machinations. Like, Raiden sending his consciousness back so only he knows. Genius. Like, that game is so good.
That's it. And that was really good. Yeah. So I know this is bigger. I know this is on probably a larger scope, but they've done it once before and they nailed it. And I can just hope that they continue.
They've
that
just
again.
They've never done the wider, almost like universal truth stuff. Like Chronica was as big as it got, where you had like I said, all the old characters were meeting their new selves across timelines, and now that's you've reforged the world. Like you said, Shang Tsung is almost like he's coming through a portal. He's just sort of like, oh, I'm always going to be unrulable.
Yeah.
Which is fun. The MK11 Aftermath DLC had the best Shang Tsung scenes in ever. And they, I forget the name of the actor now who plays him in the Mortal Kombat movie, that they got back to be Shang Tsung. That's great.
Yeah,
that's
that was perfect. Really sick. Yeah,
unbelievably good. And so yeah, like there's a way to have him be this maniacal cackling villain, and just make that stuff work. I definitely trust them, like you said. It's just that I want it to matter. Basically, yeah. I still want it to matter, like the lore to matter.
Of course,
and not just wipe it away every few.
I know what you mean. I know I praised the MCU about, you know, 3 minutes ago, but I did say I liked it to a point,
yes.
And that's the point that you mentioned, to the point, how many times did I say that word? To the point that it gets so big that it does become stakeless. You almost can't fit it entirely in your head.
No.
You don't know what this means for the characters that you've been following. Can they just be replaced? Does anything have consequence anymore?
There's also like a pitfall for Mortal Kombat is like, obviously the game's development's taking place. I mean, MK11 was 2018 or 19, so you've got a good sort of 4 or 5 years for this. It is designed in theory for a audience that still cares about superhero tropes. Like everybody in here is super powered. Like everyone has ridiculous over the top moves and everything else. And like I said, in the wider framing, you have a god versus ostensibly like the devil or whatever it is. And you have these big, big stakes, which are so far removed from just a martial arts tournament that we had.
Of course.
At the beginning.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, though, because that's doing the rounds by the Friday the 13th devs. Is it good?
It's too early to tell. It's extremely early days. I only got it last night. I've only played a few rounds,
right.
Mostly as the killers. I've only done one as the victims,
they're called. Cameo inclusion, the killers?
I'm going to see them this week, funnily enough.
Hey.
I'm going to go see the killers. Maybe they'll be in as downloadable skins. Who knows?
I'm now trying to do the worst joke possible, carry on. Just outdoing myself.
This is a funny game. Well, it's not, because it's about people getting like disemboweled. But
it's
a funny game to me, because I didn't know if I was going to get it. It's obviously on Game Pass. But the style of asymmetrical multiplayer that it is not necessarily for me, or at least hasn't been in the past. If you played a game like the Friday the 13th game that you mentioned there, or Dead by Daylight, you kind of know what you're going to expect. Mm-hmm. This time around, you have 3 playable killers versus 4 victims/survivors. The victims are trying to escape the level. The killers, are trying to stop them escaping the level.
Why is anyone with Leatherface? I watched a little bit of the gameplay for this, and yeah. I was like, I don't want that at all. I don't want team combat. I thought the whole point of this was to be like Friday the 13th, where you have the one dude with the... I just couldn't give Leatherface a bunch of abilities, so...
Well, the difference is, I think, we'll get into Texas Chainsaw Massacre lore, because weirdly have become a huge Texas Chainsaw Massacre fan over the past 2 years. Managed to watch all the movies, got well into them, so because of that, I thought, you know what, I can go for this. But the reason Leatherface isn't solo is because he's kind of never been. He's always had the family, you know, right back to the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre game that this is based on. Like, he's in that movie a lot, but he's kind of like, he's the main antagonist, but he's not really, because he doesn't speak. You know, it's the family that does the speaking. It's the family that does most of the active tormenting. Mm-hmm. And you get those characters in this game. You get the father figure.
Who's the crazy old grandpa.
Old grandpa is in there. I'll tell you how he's mechanically involved in a second. But yeah, the three killers from the first movie that you get are, of course, Leatherface. You get the dad, and you get the hitchhiker, the crazy hitchhiker that is the first villain you see in that movie. So they're all, like, movie accurate. And I quite like the change that brings, because they all obviously play radically different. Leatherface is actually quite cumbersome. Like, he's a heavy hitter, but he can't really track the victims all that well. He's someone that you almost need to call in when the other killers...
You need to kite people towards him.
That's it, right? The other killers set ambushes where you can run them into Leatherface, who will just start revving his chainsaw and start taking them out. But this isn't necessarily my thing, but my girlfriend last night, she was like, you know, let's play it. We'll have some fun. And she's got an Xbox, so she downloaded it on Game Pass. I bought it on PlayStation.
Nice.
And had a lot of fun, especially doing what I just mentioned there, coordinating as the killers was so fun. Being like, you know, shouting over the room saying, like, I found one. I'm going to try to cart them towards your direction. You jump out of a closet, start slashing them with a knife, rev that chainsaw, get them scared and stuff. And that part of it was so fun. And I guess slightly different to something like Friday the 13th or Dead by Daylight, where there's one killer, because it means that there's more opportunity to be the killers. I remember trying to play Friday the 13th as Jason and having to wait in lobbies for what seemed like forever to get that chance. But because these, you just inherently have more killers this time around, I feel like the chances is bigger, and it's kind of more balanced in that way, whereas you don't feel like you have to play as the victims if you don't want it. Right. You can just, we just jumped into game after game, and we managed to get the killers like every single time.
That's fun. How is the general sort of performance, playable animation, stuff like that? I find that like Friday the 13th was a game that succeeded despite being quite janky. Like it was, like I really liked that game. I think that's one of my favorite multiplayer games. Just fill a room full of people and take turns or whatever. Like that's really, really fun, especially for the survivors. You can try and point out where Jason's about to jump you from and things like that. How does this thing run? Because I feel like Illphonic, if it is still Illphonic.
It is not. It's actually Sumo Nottingham.
Right, okay. Because like there was that whole weird thing where they did Friday the 13th, Illphonic did, and then they lost the license. So it was like a version of the game is online, but they couldn't add anything to it.
Yeah.
And then they did, I think it was them also did Predator, Concrete Jungle, that's the PlayStation 2, and Predator Hunting Ground.
That's right.
Which was the same idea. And I was like, how much are they just doing this again and again and again? Not really polishing any of them, but getting in on the fan level and being like, okay, does that patch over how badly some things can run?
Well, this is it. I don't really know how the Friday the 13th game ran. I didn't play enough of it, but obviously this is like...
It's fine. It's just animations are janky.
Right.
AF.
Well,
servicing's
with new developers, there is a bit of jank to it. Like, it is a budget title. Like, it's not a full price release. I think I paid £35 for it on the PlayStation Store, and it's on Game Pass. There is definite jank to it. You know, when you kind of hit people, it's not the smoothest animation. but it still looks really good. I think the lighting in particular, with the kind of harsh Texas sunlight outside juxtaposed with those really kind of pitch black shadows that you can hide in. It looks good. It is definitely has a level of jank that I think all of these games seem to have.
Yeah.
But for the price point, I think it kind of gets away with it. The big sticking point, I was checking some reviews this morning that a lot of the reviews have is like this more the server side of things. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of stories about like waiting a long time for a match or getting disconnected. Like I said, it's so early days for me that I didn't experience that, but I mean, it's a sample of four games. I might jump on tonight and not find a game.
I guess launch weekend's
going to
be busier or whatever anyway.
Absolutely. So I don't know if I just got lucky on that front, but that is something to keep in mind that I've seen a lot of people mention that. I think it's a strange game, right? Because it's based on the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, which is, you know, kind of obviously the best Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie.
I don't even think I knew there was more than one.
Well,
other than they've rebooted the original.
My friend, there are about seven.
Okay.
There are 4 in the original canon. There are 2 remakes. There is a prequel. There is a direct sequel. And then there is a legacy sequel that they did on Netflix last year. So that's like 8 movies, right?
Right,
if my maths are correct. And that
one from last year was like voted one of the worst movies of all time or something.
It sucked. I wouldn't go as far to say it was one of the worst movies of all time, but it wasn't.
Right.
It wasn't great. Like, the sequels are mostly bad. But I still want to see them represented in the game.
Yes.
And it's such a shame because, yeah, people love the original, but that's all that this is based on. Mm. I didn't realize this when I jumped in. I expected to see skins from the sequels or characters from the sequels because I wasn't following it closely enough to know that it is only based on that first movie. I was checking the Wikipedia page out for it this morning, and on there it kind of has a bit about how they signed the rights with, I think it was one of the co-creators of the first movie, but that's all they have the rights to. To me, is a shame because
they're massively limiting with levels as well.
Yeah.
A house.
Absolutely. So you have those 3 killers that I mentioned, but you also have 2 original creations.
Mm.
And that, to me, is a bit of a letdown because, you know, the other movies might not be exceptional, but you have good villains in there.
Right.
Right? You have people that you could, in inspirations that you could draw from. You have victims and survivors that I would like to see. You have environments that I would like to see. You certainly have killers and other versions of Leatherface that I would like to see represented. And I worry about its long-term kind of longevity if you don't have access to those rights, because I love the Evil Dead game that came out last year, partly because it was a love letter to the entire franchise. You had about 4 different versions of Ash. You had characters from the TV show. You had characters, deep cut characters from the movies that you didn't expect to see in a game, you know, with the actors themselves reprising those voice roles. You had DLC that brought in the Evil Dead remake. It was a real love letter. You had everything that you wanted if you were an Evil Dead fan. And this gives you everything you wanted if you're a Texas Chainsaw Massacre fan, but only a Texas Chainsaw Massacre fan. And by that, I mean the original movie.
Yeah, and it's like, I remember when they announced it, I was like, well, it's the Friday the 13th overall approach anyway. And I was like, okay, like you can do that. You can do that mold with Leatherface. But it makes me think of level design stuff. I'm personally completely hung up on the fact that it's not just 1v4 or whatever. I don't want to be working with Leatherface.
Really?
But I know you mentioned the family stuff. How does that stuff work?
I like it a lot.
When you said before about it, Leatherface has never been like a solo dude.
Yeah.
I can only push. For me, he's like the solo dude. Like, there's the family in the background, but they're not all running around together.
Oh, they are. Yeah. In those, in all the movies, really. Like, Leatherface is kind of, he's the bruiser that comes in. Like, in the first movie, like, he's obviously the standout star. You know, he's an iconic horror villain. But he's never been, like, the solo guy. In none of the movies, apart from the very last,
I guess the first half of the original, the most iconic scenes are like, it's Leatherface taking people out. Like that bit when he grabs that woman through the back of the staircase shot.
That's
and it's
in
like hanging dudes on hooks and stuff.
That's like the opening third of the movie, though.
Yeah.
Like that, like you said, in the back half of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1.
Yeah,
like
I guess they all kind of chasing through the reeds and everything.
Yeah, he's there, but like I would argue the iconic scene from that movie is the family scene where Sally is. She's sat down and then, you know, they're kind of tormenting her. You've got the hitchhiker and you've got the old man who's trying to get the grandpa out to hit her over the head. To me, it's always been a team effort, especially going through the movies.
Team effort.
And even in the second one, man, it opens with this mad scene where you've got a new villain, and he's kind of driving Leatherface down the road, and Leatherface is revving his chainsaw on the side of this car. And it's like, it's always been about that sick family.
At least
in my opinion. I know, obviously, like, if you're not necessarily a huge fan of the franchise, you probably think of it just as the Leatherface franchise.
I totally
I think that kind of family is core to it. I mean, it's kind of why Resident Evil 7 kind of was inspired by it so much because
Definitely that dinner scene.
Yeah, a group of sickos working in like a sicko house to torment someone.
There were grandpa mechanics of this as well.
Yes.
There's things they do.
Yeah, so I guess I should probably explain the gameplay loop because the grandpa is kind of central to it. So when you're,
I can't believe it.
Yeah, man. Like the grandpa essentially works as a sonar. So that can highlight enemies if they run past him or get in the vicinity and make too much noise. And what you're doing as the killers, you're not only like setting traps and hunting down the victims, but you're collecting blood from places around the map. And when you attack someone, if they get away, you also get blood from them.
Right.
From every attack that you manage to, you know, hit. Mm-hmm. So then you take the blood back to Grandpa and you feed the blood to Grandpa and you can level him up as the match goes on. So his sonar abilities are better. So you can't play
him. You can level him up.
But he's a central sort of figure.
Does he stand up and do stuff?
No, well, this is the thing. The Grandpa never does.
Oh.
He sort of sits there. He can't even swing a hammer in the movie universe.
I thought one of the finishing cutscenes would be him doing his little bonk.
Well, you see, that bonk is crap. He's never bonked anyone. That's the thing, right?
Level 10 Grandpa.
I want to see someone, put him next to Grandpa and Grandpa try the bonk. Right. That would be very movie accurate. But no, he's kind of there as a watcher almost, someone that you can't disturb, which is really cool. So yeah, as the killers, you're kind of like, obviously you're on the hunt, you can set traps, and you have to work together because, you know, if one of the killers is running around unlocking doors, you're essentially, you know, opening the level up for the victims. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of team play required for this game that might put some people off. You can't really solo it, I wouldn't say. And that's the same for the victims. Obviously, you have one extra person, but everyone has their individual skills. Everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. Like I said, Leatherface is the bruiser, but the old, the father, the patriarch of the family, he has like super listening, super hearing, so he can listen out for footsteps. He can kind of gauge where the survivors are if they're making too much noise. He doesn't hit as hard, but he can still hit. So they've all got like pros and cons, and it's definitely more of a unit and a kind of team thing rather than maybe Friday the 13th where you can kind of go off on your own or you're the only killer and you've got all of these abilities. Mm. It's kind of like you need to weigh up the pros and cons of every approach almost. And that's why I can't like almost judge it right now because I've still got so much to see with the game. I need to know how people really play it. What are the best tactics? What are the best ways to build them with the upgrade trees and the perks that they can get and all of that stuff. So it's very early days. There's quite a lot of depth to it. And I just hope that the level design manages to facilitate long-term play that remains fun and engaging.
It's so crazy how many of these there's now been. Like, Dead by Daylight is obviously the go-to, and the amount of DLC packs for that means it has ticked off most franchises at this point. Or they've got, like, a character that's an analog to someone like Leatherface or whatever. And I don't play that much Dead by Daylight, but I see the DLC announcements all the time. And, Nick Cage is getting added to it or whatever. And then, like I said, on the other side, you've got Friday the 13th, Predator, now Texas Chainsaw. It's like, it's just this little burgeoning full genre, like, just kind of on the side. And it's like, there's not been one that's like a full 5-star, oh my God, this is the one kind of thing. The nearest probably is Dead by Daylight. But the mechanics, once you do get lost in them, like I said, I really like Friday the 13th. But I like being Jason. I like doing I like being the evil dude teleporting around. Someone's about to escape and you warp right in front of them and it's like they just can't get to the exit. And I'm like, yeah, this is really, really fun. So I want to do more of that stuff.
So you can't do necessarily stuff like that in here because it's more about the chase, right? All of the killers are kind of slow. Some are faster than others. Mm. But you do a lot. There's a lot of time spent like just running after someone, and I like that because it's very Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yes. Like some of the most iconic sequences from that franchise are, of course, Leatherface revving his chainsaw, chasing someone through the woods or down their farmhouse.
A rev button.
There's a rev button, good, which is exciting. Like that kind of core enjoyment of being Leatherface and being able to rev the chainsaw while closing it on someone. That is really fun. Like I said, I normally gravitate towards something like Evil Dead the game where there's more activity with the survivors because in that game it's more of a Left 4 Dead than it is a Friday the 13th where there's someone controlling the demonic hordes and being able to play as specific demons, but it's mostly about the survivors kind of taking on waves of enemies trying to complete objectives. Mm. There are of course objectives here, but I would maybe like a bit more interplay between the survivors and the killers. Maybe there's a way I could like revive some enemies or something, teammates or something like that. But I'm going to find out more about that in kind of the long term. I worry about its long term because it is only based on that first movie. And I wonder how much you can get out of that because, I mean, they've already invented survivors. They've already invented killers for the game. Mm. Like, there's not really much to draw from that one movie in particular.
That was my thing, like, looking at it. Like I said, like, you can do a version of Friday the 13th, like, as a Texas Chainsaw skin kind of thing. ironically for Leatherface himself with the way he treats faces.
Yes.
But still, I always kind of thought, yeah, what else are you going to be able to do? And then if it's a rights thing that's actually getting in the way, I wonder if the success of this, hopefully it does do well, means they can take that to the whatever conversations they need to and be like, look, it's only going to bolster the Texas Chainsaw IP overall if anyone else cares about that. I don't know if there's a new movie on the way or whatever after the Netflix one, but it feels like this could be the nexus of everything.
That's it.
Like, why not have all the skin packs and everything?
Exactly. That's kind of what I was looking for out of this game. Mm. And maybe it's unfair to kind of criticize it because it's never tried to fool anyone. It's always been upfront about it being an adaptation of that first game. But when I look at like the customization options on display, they're just not that interesting to me. Mm. Like Leatherface has two other skins that you can get from that first movie that are really cool, but the other killers don't.
Oh, really?
Okay. And you get some other skins for the survivors, but they're just kind of boring palette swaps, slight variations in color. And maybe I'm not speaking for the vast majority of fans who might just want an authentic TCM original game, but I would like to see them, like I said, pull from the entire universe, bring in this version of Leatherface, add this character, bring back this actor who we've seen. It's such a rich universe, and I hope they do kind of figure out the rights going forward to bolster it with sequel content.
Yeah, I think that they are like casting a net where like I didn't know about the universe stuff you're talking about, the anything other than Leatherface with chainsaw kills dudes. That's that's it. Like that's all I knew for that thing, and I'm not going to watch the other movies. So this is good for me. But I guess if they can get enough of a player base through that, and then they can add stuff to it later.
That's it. It's kind of like, who is your audience? Who you're trying to attract? I know you're obviously going for, in a way, the kind of more casual Dead by Daylight fans, the people who just love this style of game. But I keep comparing it to The Evil Dead because that managed to be both. That was like this casual leaning experience that didn't skimp on the hardcore Evil Dead fandom. Like, I love The Evil Dead franchise, right? I love every single one of those movies. Mm-hmm. Evil Dead 2 made me want to make movies when I was younger. Right. But I didn't care about the characters until the game. Like, I still couldn't tell you really many of the victims' names out of the franchise. Because, like, you were envisioning Texas Chainsaw as this Leatherface kind of versus the fodder franchise. I always thought Evil Dead was just, you know, it was Ash, it was Bruce Campbell versus the Deadites. Mm-hmm. But then you have a game that kind of champions all elements of the law, and you kind of think, oh no, this is way deeper than I was giving it credit for. To me, Texas Chainsaw has a much larger inbuilt lore as a series, much more to pull from, which is why it's a shame that they don't have it in a franchise that isn't based around that stuff, kind of does.
Yeah, like I said, hopefully there's just a roadmap for it going forward, but it's solid enough step forward. The fact that it's on Game Pass is huge.
Absolutely.
Because you might as well just go and grab it if you have Game Pass. Josh, I want to tell you about a game called The Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood.
What is this?
This is a thing. Have you heard of Red Strings Club?
No.
Just words in your direction at this point. There was a game a good few years ago called Red Strings Club from a dev team called Deconstruction Team. And I absolutely loved it. It's like a cyberpunk thing. You play as a bartender and you're just like looking after the Red Strings Club. It's like a jazz club in the middle of like a cyberpunk type city. And all the gameplay, apart from one of the, there's like two facets to gameplay. You have the stuff where you're the bartender, and the gameplay itself revolves around mixing drinks and making sure people get served properly and stuff. But it's very much on the side. The main meat of the game is the text. It's the story. It's just the narrative. It's like, what's it like being this bartender and all the different types of people that come through in this city. And you find out all about their histories, their stories, what's going on. Maybe some of them know each other or whatever. And then the other half of the game was about like an android building herself in different ways to eventually be free. And then all of that stuff comes together across the story. I loved it. Like, it was just, the music's gorgeous. Really great ambient, you know, jazz piano stuff mixed with obviously like synth stuff. And more happens in the story overall. So I loved it. And it was one of those things where I just randomly saw like a tweet from the devs just saying like, hey, we're the Red Strings guys. Here's our new one. And I was like, immediately I'm buying this because it wasn't even on my radar. I know it's Devolver as a publisher, so I'll always check out what they've got coming up. So it's the new one from Deconstruct Team, if I pronounce it properly. And it's published by Devolver. It's called The Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood, which is the weirdest name for a thing.
Great name.
Great name. Very much stands out, very easy to Google. All about witchcraft and the idea of a witch who has been exiled onto an asteroid floating around through space.
Yeah.
And she has her own little condo where she's been exiled to because all the rest of the witches. So she was once doing a tarot reading, and the thing that she read from the tarot is like the end of the witch's coven. Which my wife says it's coven. I'm pretty sure. I thought it was coven.
I thought it was coven.
I'm going to go with, oh, it's a coven. Coventry. Coventry. I thought it was a witch's coven.
Coven. I don't know.
All the witches can get in touch and let us know.
They can.
What they think. I'm going to go with coven because it sounds better. But anyway, she's been exiled from her group and they were just like, oh my God, you can't talk about the end of us. You're not supposed to read that. You're going on the asteroid and you've got your own little apartment, little two-floor place. She then summons a demon. She's called Fortuna. She summons a demon called Abramar, who's she like says the words that you're not supposed to say, the one thing that the witches tell you, you're never supposed to say this thing because you'll uncork this demon that's not supposed to be there. And so this like big like snake-like demon, kind of looks like Jafar from in Return of Jafar from the second Aladdin movie. Big snaky top-built dude. Starts talking to her and she just says, look, I've summoned you because I ultimately want to be free. Yeah. I don't want to stay here and I'd rather just sacrifice my life and everyone else's and doom humanity rather than be stuck here. Will you help me escape? And so the game then becomes all the conversations between Fortuna and Abramar, but the gameplay, other than tons of text and story and like little backstories about what Abramar is and how he sort of knows the history of humanity, and he talks about like the witches and how those things have intersected over human history and whatever. And Fortuna is building a new deck because the way you're going to get out is learning all of Abramar's arts and skills. So it's rather than just be standard tarot stuff, it's learning like the most evil spells possible from Abramar. And the way that you do that in gameplay is you design the cards themselves. So it almost becomes like a miniature Photoshop game, right, which I love because they give you all these different aspects. You build the cards in different layers. You pick a background, a character, accessories, whatever, and you layer them up however you want. You can actually make a Red Strings Club card, which is great. You can put the bartender in and have the drinks and stuff. And whatever ways you make those cards, the game then scans it and says, okay, you put this next to this and this next to this. That means that you get this many points towards your overall skill points that you're then going to use in conversations going forward, which means you can unlock different bits of information when you're talking to Abramar, or you start getting flashback scenes as to what happened with Fortuna before she got exiled and went to the asteroid. So I'm only maybe an hour through it, but it's just so immediately arresting and unique and conceptually strong, and the music's great.
Yeah,
and I just love the setup of this, just this witch summoning the most evil spirit ever.
That's it.
To get off this asteroid. It's great.
Like that. I mean, I must admit, you lost me a little bit with the photoshopping cards mechanic, but like the setup and the characters, that sounds like one of the most, like you said, creative things that I've heard.
So the flashback that I did was of Fortuna and two of her friends in like a little VW camper van, not unlike a Texas Chainsaw camper van.
Amazing.
Going to a beach party and then just hanging out as the three of them and talking about the potential of what they're going to do next with their lives. And obviously Fortuna goes off to do witch stuff.
I mean, it's such a noise there because that's such nectar for me, that like the coming of age sort of party scene where people are talking about the future and where they've come from is just my kind of narrative.
You should play Oxenfree 1.
I'm absolutely going in.
But it's in that vein, you know, Night of the Woods, Night in the Woods, Oxenfree 1, at least in terms of the flashback scenes. Obviously, there's a huge gulf between where she was and where she is now and why she wants to be free. And a lot of the really cool stuff is the questions that Abramar asks you about, like, why do you want this magic? What do you want this to do? And you touch on different schools, even arcane schools of what it means for like earth magic and fire magic and everything else, and air magic, and air meaning community and the space between us and how you respect that. And like, and you can take it in different ways. And however you answer Abramar's questions, again, is tied into the different points you get from the cards that you make. But all of that is going into infinite decisions, it feels like, that the game is tracking in terms of assumedly how the story is going to play out or whatever. So extremely strong foot forward. If you love just narrative games, like I can recommend Red Strings Club wholeheartedly. I love that thing. It's on Switch and Steam. And and then this Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood is this follow-up one that I'm, like I said, I'm hour or so in, but Red Strings wasn't that long either. So I think these are just going to be really short, gorgeously made, punchy stories.
I'm going to Google both of those games and that studio immediately after this podcast, because I had not heard of any of these things that you just mentioned and throw my way, but they sound, at least from a story perspective, very intriguing.
I think out of the two, because you don't love like cyberpunky stuff as much as I do, so I think probably would like the setup of Sisterhood more. But yeah, I can't vouch for all of Sisterhood yet, but it's made a very, very strong first impression.
This is the thing. You are 100% spot on, but I also like the idea of like a bartender framing,
it's,
you know?
So good, man. Like, yeah, I can't recommend both of those games enough, especially the soundscape for Red Strings. Actually, I'll tell you what I'll super quickly throw in, because I just remembered that I was playing this all week and then just blanked it, is Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. I'm not going to spend too long on it.
Yeah.
But Bomb Rush Cyberpunk is the new game that is entirely Jet Set Radio. I don't know if you played Jet Set when you were a kid.
No, but I obviously know what it is, but never played it, no.
Just worth throwing in that game is absolutely stellar, like unbelievably good. Like, they've got oh, the dude's surname is Naganuma, the composer who did Jet Set Radio's original music, back in to score this one. The game plays gorgeously. It runs ludicrously well for a Switch game.
Nice.
Just super smooth, lots of combos, unlocking different characters and everything. And you can do skateboarding, rollerblading, BMXing, whatever. It's just a great, great game that I want to throw in when I'm thinking about stellar music, like audio footprints. Like the punch of that game is great.
Funny, considering that I would argue that the games aren't kicking back in until the end of this week, yet you've got all of this stuff to talk about, which is very fascinating.
It's Mortal Kombat sort of ushered it in. It was like this Friday was like, oh, Bomb Rush is out and Mortal Kombat's out, or the beta's out, and then Texas Chainsaw is out, and then Cosmic Sisterhood dropped as well.
Well, would you permit me to talk about an unbelievably good game?
Yes, that's what I was going to go anyway.
Ah, beautiful stuff. I have been playing Blasphemous for the past few weeks, mm-hmm. and because we got a very early code. Mm-hmm. By the way, this is how all reviews should be handled. We got the code for Blasphemous 2 through like a few weeks ago.
Or something,
I feel like I finished this game genuinely 2 weeks ago, which is crazy.
Starfield's not got a word in.
No.
Where are you at,
Blasphemous
Bethesda?
2 is out this week. The embargo was up last week. We did do a video on it, and I'll probably end up repeating myself a little bit here.
It's out this week, though.
Yes, I mean, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was obviously a huge fan of the original Blasphemous, partly because of the grotesque art style it had, and partly because it had this Soulsian ethos of being a tough-as-hell Metroidvania game where you're dealing with Souls-adjacent mechanics like a checkpoint system that respawns enemies and long gauntlets and stuff. Blasphemous 2, though, is very much a refined version of that and very much a more Metroidvania, a classic Metroidvania experience. For me, I was really surprised that it kind of dialed down the challenge in a way. It still has some really difficult fights in it, but it is way more accessible than the first game. It doesn't have, at least in my experience, those same gauntlets where you're just throwing yourself at an area over and over again, hoping to get through one set of enemies so then you can be smashed by the next set of enemies and you have to do it all again. Mm-hmm. It seems way, not fairer, but the challenge is more in the exploration. The challenge is more in conquering the map, and I think if you're a fan of Metroidvanias or you're a fan of the original Blasphemous, then Blasphemous 2 should be on your radar because it's been one of the most Moorish experiences I've had all year where I thought, well, I've got a month to play it, and it's kind of dropped in unexpectedly. I'll probably jump in now and again.
I remember talking to you the day after and you going, I'm on the final boss.
That's literally, I thought I'll drizzle it across the next 4 weeks. No, played it for 5 hours the first night, played it for 5 hours the second night, played it for 5 hours the day after, then completed it on the fourth day. It was just that kind of engrossing because, I mean, you play way more Metroidvanias than I do, Scott, but I felt like every single time I got a new upgrade in this game, I just wanted to check out what it did, which areas it unlocked. So I was unlocking those abilities, fast traveling to previously explored areas to finish them off. It obviously you get a lovely percentage icon of how much you've ticked off the map in the top left-hand corner, I think, of the main menu screen. So I was always thinking, I can get that up a percent. I can get that up to the next round number.
I adore Metroidvanias. I still want you to play Metroid Dread. You've not got
there. I will,
one day. Super Metroid, Metroid Dread, Metroid Fusion, they're all there.
I'm going to play them all.
Please do.
At some point.
You clearly, because you really like Hollow Knight as well. So it's just Metroid. I've realized, because I didn't talk about Final Fantasy again, but Final Fantasy V is the other thing that I'm playing because it's on my Switch. I'm playing it on the train or whatever. And just most of the weekend. But I realized that turn-based RPGs are like, I just never get sick of them. They're my absolute nectar. I can't wait for Sea of Stars, which is another thing that's out later this week. And Metroidvanias are like my top two as I'm realizing going through all these different ones.
Nice.
Really, really top tier stellar Metroidvanias to me. Like, it's just, there's very few things better. Like you said, that completion loop, that thing of like getting an ability, realizing you can go back through territory, making like a mental note of where you couldn't go before and just mastering a landscape over time. There's something about the tightness because they're not open worlds. That they are memorable and explorable and then become familiar over time. The Ori games, like similar. Man, this thing sounds incredible. I think it's out on like Friday or something.
Yeah, it might even be Thursday. I think it's the 24th it drops, yeah.
I'm going to attempt to finish Final Fantasy V and Bomb Rush Cyberpunk and Sister Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood thing in the next 3 days. And then I'll be able to get on Blasphemous 2. That won't happen, but I will buy it.
I'd like to see you give it a go because everyone who seems to have played it seems to have had that kind of itch to just want to finish. Yeah. Want to see what the next area is. And obviously, the reason I was into Hollow Knight and the original Blasphemous so much was because I just adored the art style. I love the worlds that they set up. I loved seeing the different biomes, seeing the different backdrops, seeing what was next. And Blasphemous, like I said, I described it as grotesque. Like, everything in this game is more or less dripping with blood. It's kind of wet. You know? It's very wet.
It's a moist game.
The most, it's like religious iconography that, like, but like twisted and like warped and kind of refracted through a devilish gaze, I would argue.
He's a writer.
Yeah. Some of the areas, again, no spoilers because the game's not out yet, that you go to towards the end are so memorable. You just kind of want to drop the controller, look at it for a bit, take a screenshot, maybe get a new desktop background from it.
Well, that was the thing. When you search Blasphemous 2, like some of the pictures, some of the screenshots that come up are way bigger in scope than, bigger in scope than Blasphemous 1. Reminded me quite a lot of the intro of Hyper Light Drifter. Just these same as Gris as well. Have you played Gris, like the game?
I didn't know.
Gris. That's a way more straightforward. It's not a Metroidvania, but it just is maybe the best 2D art style in quite some time. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous game. I love the idea that over time, with the rise, the acceptance of pixel platformers, of pixel art designs, you know, Sisterhood that I mentioned before, that's pixelated, but just very, very detailed. I love pixel artists getting even more confident with it and doing bigger vistas and landscapes and everything.
Well, nicely, you've segued into the one big criticism I had of the game. Yeah. I know, can you believe it? It's that the art style is so good that it complements it with these animated cutscenes that are 2D sort of cartoon style. And they're good. Like, they're well put together. It's just a case of the original pixel art style being so good that I didn't want to see the 2D stuff because I'm like, what you've got there is so amazing and so painterly that I couldn't get it in my head why you would cut away from that.
Yeah.
And every single time it would cut from the cutscene to the gameplay, I just thought, this looks so much better.
I remember thinking that about Signalis and then Dead Cells as well. Yeah. Like Dead Cells, like the main character is so goofy and stupid for the rest of that game's art style that it did kind of jar with me. And then whenever they show game trailers for Dead Cells, it's like this like over the, it's like a Saturday morning cartoon vibe. The rest of the game just isn't that. In Blasphemous 2's case, like, the cutscenes are way smoother and cleaner and different color palettes than the rest of the game, at least from what I've seen so far.
Absolutely. And like I said, they're still cool in and of themselves, but Blasphemous 1 sort of split the difference where it had these kind of like more directed cutscenes, but it still used an amalgamation of the art style. It wasn't as jarring as this was. And obviously it's an intentional stylistic change, but for me, it didn't necessarily work. I just think overall Blasphemous 2 was a really good jumping on point. I saw your friend of mine, Ash Millman from PlayStation Access, talking about how she played through this first and then went back to the original Blasphemous. Like, I don't know how big this franchise is necessarily, but to me, 2 is, if you've never played 1, like, I'd say jump straight into 2. Like, it's a more refined game. And the biggest criticisms I had with 2 was that it felt like a refined version of 1. Like, I was jumping in from one game to the next, and I was a little bit disappointed here and there that they were so similar, that they were reusing some of the enemies and whatnot. But I don't think you'd have, that wouldn't even crush your mind if this was time you were experiencing the whole thing. I think you'd just be in awe at the art style, loving the crunchy combat and enjoying the refinements that you don't even know are there in the level design, where it's more immediate and kind of more, what is the word I would use? It's not easier, but it's certainly more,
they actually designed something that they want you to finish at this time.
That's it. Less punishing, I suppose, is the way I describe it. Yeah, less intentionally taking the piss.
Which I feel like is where the hard genre, the Soulsian genre is rounding the bend on that in general, like following Elden Ring. Like, they actually want you to see the rest of these games now. Which is fun. Yeah, I'll be picking that up later in the year. Later in the week. I'll be playing it later in the year probably as well. For now, though, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you throughout the week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.